The harp had come to Gwilan from her mother, and so had her mastery of it, people say. Ah, they said, when Gwilan played. You can tell that's Deira's touch. Just as their parents had said when Deira played. Ah, that's the true Penlyn touch. Gwilan's mother had had the harp from Penlyn, a musician's dying gift to the worthiest of pupils. From a musician's hands, Penlyn too had received it. Never had it been sold or bartered for, nor any value put upon it that can be said in numbers. A princely and most incredible instrument it was for a poor harper to own. The shape of it was perfection, and every part was strong and fine. The wood as hard and smooth as bronze, the fittings of ivory and silver. The grand curves of the frame bore silver mountings chased with long intertwining lines that became waves, and the waves became leaves. And the eyes of gods and stags looked out from among the leaves that became waves, and the waves became lines again. It was the work of great craftsmen, you could see that at a glance, and the longer you looked, the clearer you saw it. But all this beauty was practical, obedient, shaped to the service of sound. The sound of Gwilan's harp was water running, and rain, and sunlight on the water, waves breaking, and the foam on the brown sands, forests, the leaves and branches of the forest, and the shining eyes of gods and stags among the leaves when the wind blows in the valleys. It was all that and none of that. When Gwilan played, the harp made music, and what is music but a little wrinkling of the air? Play she did wherever they wanted her. Her singing voice was true but had no sweetness, so when it was songs and ballads, she accompanied the singers. Weak voices were borne up by her playing. Fine voices gained a glory from it. The loudest, proudest singers might keep still a verse to hear her play alone. She played with flute and reed flute and tambour, and the music made for the harp to play alone, and the music that sprang up of itself when her fingers touched the strings. At weddings and festivals it was, "Gwilan will be here to play," and at music day competitions, "When will Gwilan play?" She was young. Her hands were iron and her touch was silk. She could play all day and the next day too. She traveled from valley to valley, from town to town, stopping here and staying there and moving on again with other musicians on their wanderings. They walked, or a wagon was sent for them, or they got a lift on a farmer's cart. However they went, Gwilan carried her harp in its silk and leather case, at her back or in her hands. When she rode with the harp, and when she walked with the harp, and when she slept, no, she didn't sleep with the harp, but it was there where she could reach out and touch it. She wasn't jealous of it, and would change instruments with another harper gladly. It was a great pleasure to her when at last they gave her back her own, saying with sober envy, "I never played so fine an instrument." She kept it clean, the mountings polished, and strung it with the harp strings made by old Uliad, which cost as much a piece as a whole set of common harp strings. In the heat of summer, she carried it in the shade of her body. In the bitter winter, it shared her cloak. In a firelit hall, she didn't sit with it very near the fire, nor yet too far away, for changes of heat and cold would change the voice of it and perhaps harm the frame. She didn't look after herself with half the care. Indeed, she saw no need to. She knew there were other harpers, and would be other harpers, most not as good, some better. But the harp was the best. There had not been, and there would not be, a better. Delight and service were due and fitting to it. She wasn't its owner, but its player. It was her music, her joy, her life, the noble instrument. She was young. She traveled from town to town. She played a fine long life at weddings and the green leaves at festivals. There were funerals with the burial feast, the singing of elegies, and Gwilan to play the lament of Orioth, the music that crashes and cries out like the sea and the seabirds, bringing relief and a burst of tears to the grief-dried heart. There were music days with a rivalry of harpers and a shrilling of fiddlers and a mighty outshouting of tenors. She went from town to town in sun and rain, the harp on her back or in her hands. So she was going one day to the yearly music day at Comyn, and the landowner of Torm Vale was giving her a lift. A man who so loved music that he traded a good cow for a bad horse, since the cow wouldn't take him where he could hear music play. It was he and Gwilan in a rickety cart, and the lean-necked roan stepping out down the steep sunlit road from Torm. a bear in the forest by the road, or a bear's ghost, or the shadow of a hawk. The horse shied half across the road. Torm had been discussing music deeply with Gwilon, waving his hands to conduct a choir of voices, and the reins went flipping out of those startled hands. The horse jumped like a cat and ran. At the sharp curve of the road, the cart swung round and smashed against the rocky cutting. A wheel leapt free and rolled, rocking like a top for a few yards. The roan went plunging and sliding down the road with half the wrecked cart dragging behind, and was gone. And the road lay silent in the sunlight between the forest trees. Torm had been thrown from the cart and lay stunned for a minute or two. Gwilon had clutched the harp to her when the horse shied, but had lost hold of it in the smash. The cart had tipped over and dragged on it. It was in its case of leather and embroidered silk, but when, one-handed, she got the case out from under the wheel and opened it, she didn't take out a harp, but a piece of wood, and another piece, and a tangle of strings, and a sliver of ivory, and a twisted shell of silver chased with lines and leaves and eyes held by a silver nail to a fragment of the frame. It was 6 months without playing after that, since her arm had broken at the wrist. The wrist healed well enough, but there was no mending the harp. By then, the landowner of Torm had asked her if she'd marry him, and she had said yes. Sometimes she wondered why she had said yes, having never thought much of marriage before. But if she looked steadily into her own mind, she saw the reason why. She saw Torm on the road in the sunlight, kneeling by the broken harp, his face all blood and dust, and he was weeping. When she looked at that, she saw that the time for rambling and roving was over and gone. One day is the day for moving on, and overnight, the next day, there's no more good in moving on, because you've come where you were going to. Gwilon brought to the marriage a gold piece, which had been the prize last year at Four Valleys Music Day. She had sewn it to her bodice as a brooch, because where on earth could you spend a gold piece? She also had 2 silver pieces, 5 coppers, and a good winter cloak. Torm contributed house and household, fields and forests, 4 tenant farmers, even poorer than himself, 20 hens, 5 cows, and 40 sheep. They married in the old way, by themselves, over the spring where the stream began, and came back and told the household. Torm had never suggested a wedding with singing and harp playing, never a word of all that. He was a man you could trust, Torm was. What began in pain, in tears, was never free from the fear of pain. The two of them were gentle to each other. Not that they lived together 30 years without some quarreling. 2 rocks sitting side by side would get sick of each other in 30 years, and who knows what they say now and then when nobody's listening. But if people trust each other, they can grumble, and a good bit of grumbling takes the fuel from wrath. Their quarrels went up and burnt out like bits of paper, leaving nothing but a feather of ash, a laugh in bed in the dark. Torm's land never gave more than enough, and there was no money saved. But it was a good house, and the sunlight was sweet on those high, stony fields. There were 2 sons who grew up into cheerful, sensible men. One had a taste for roving, and the other was a farmer born, but neither had any gift of music. Gwilon never spoke of wanting another harp, but about the time her wrist was healed, old Uliad had a traveling musician bring her one on loan. When he had an offer to buy it at its worth, he sent for it back again. At that time, Torm would have it that there was money from selling 3 good heifers to the landowner of Comin High Farm, and the money should buy a harp, which it did. 1 or 2 later, an old friend, a flute player still on his travels and rambles, brought her a harp from the south as a present. The 3 heifers' harp was a common instrument, plain and heavy. The southern harp was delicately carved and gilt, but cranky to tune and thin of voice. Gwilon could draw sweetness from the one and strength from the other. When she picked up a harp or spoke to a child, it obeyed her. She played at all festivities and funerals in the neighborhood, and with the musician's fees, she bought good strings, not Uliad's strings, though, for Uliad was in his grave before her 2nd child was born. If there was a music day nearby, she went to it with Torm. She would not play in the competitions, not for fear of losing, but because she wasn't a harper now, and if they didn't know it, she did. So they had her judge the competitions, which she did well and mercilessly. Often in the early years, musicians would stop by on their travels and stay 2 or 3 nights at Torm. With them, she would play the Hunts of Orioth the dances of Kale, the difficult and learned music of the North, and learn from them the new songs. Even in winter evenings there was music in the House of Torm, she playing the harp, usually the Three Heifers one, sometimes the fretful Southerner, and Torm's good tenor voice, and the boys singing, first in sweet treble, later on in husky, unreliable baritone. And one of the farm's men was a lively fiddler, and the shepherd Keth, when he was there, played on the pipes, though he never could tune them to anyone else's note. "It's our own music day tonight," Gwilan would say. "Put another log on the fire, Torm, and sing The Green Leaves with me, and the boys will take the descant." Her wrist that had been broken grew a little stiff as the years went on. Then the arthritis came into her hands. The work she did in house and farm was not easy work. But then who, looking at a hand, would say it was made to do easy work? You can see from the look of it that it's meant to do difficult things, that it's the noble, willing servant of the heart and mind. But the best servants get clumsy as the years go on. Gwilan could still play the harp, but not as well as she had played, and she didn't much like half measures. So the two harps hung on the wall, though she kept them tuned. About that time, the younger son went wandering off to see what things looked like in the north, and the elder married and brought his bride to Torm. Old Keth was found dead up on the mountain in the spring rain, his dog crouched silent by him, and the sheep nearby. And the drought came, and the good year, and the poor year, and there was food to eat, and to be cooked, and clothes to wear, and to be washed, poor year or good year. In the depth of a winter, Torm took ill. He went from a cough to a high fever to quietness, and died while Gwilan sat beside him. 30 years. How can you say how long that is, and yet no longer than the saying of it, 30 years? How can you say how heavy the weight of 30 years is, and yet you can hold all of them together in your hand lighter than a bit of ash, briefer than a laugh in the dark? The 30 years began in pain. They passed in peace, contentment, but they didn't end there. They ended where they began. Gwilan got up from her chair and went into the hearth room. The rest of the household were asleep. In the light of her candle, she saw the two harps hung against the wall, the Three Heifers harp and the gilded southern harp, the dull music and the false music. She thought, "I'll take them down at last and smash them on the hearthstone. Crush them till they're only bits of wood and tangles of wire like my harp." But she didn't. She could not play them at all anymore. Her hands were far too stiff. It is silly to smash an instrument you cannot even play. "There's no instrument left that I can play," Gwilan thought. And the thought hung in her mind for a while like a long cord till she knew the notes that made it. "I thought my harp was myself. But it was not. It was destroyed. I was not. I thought Torm's wife was myself, but she was not. He's dead. I'm not. I have nothing left at all now but myself. The wind blows from the valley, and there's a voice on the wind, a bit of a tune. Then the wind falls or changes. The work has to be done, and we did the work. It's their turn now for that, the children. There's nothing left for me to do but sing. I never could sing. But you play the instrument you have." So she stood by the cold hearth and sang the melody of Orioth's lament. The people of the household wakened in their beds and heard her singing, all but Torm, but he knew that tune already. The untuned strings of the harps hung on the wall wakened and answered softly, voice to voice, like eyes that shine among the leaves when the wind is blowing.